Mr. Nuttall was a very nervous man. He had been undergoing treatment for several years now, and as he had an independent income and no need to work, he spent a great deal of his time in visits to friends and relatives. Before his nervous condition had come about, he had been an almost total recluse, spending a great deal of time raising mushrooms in his damp cellar and reading a large number of books. As a consequence, his visits to see relations consisted of meeting a large group of comparative strangers. It was in the early fall of the year when he knocked on the door of the Sappleton residence. He was ushered in by a very dignified 10-year-old girl who asked him to have a seat and told him that her aunt would be down shortly. She sat for a moment glancing at a large, strangely bound book, then looked up at Mr. Nuttall. Do you know many of the people around here? She asked. Hardly a soul, said Mr. Nuttall. Then you know practically nothing about my aunt, said the girl. Now, Mr. Nuttall admitted he knew only her name and address. The young girl smiled sympathetically. Her great tragedy happened just 3 years ago. Tragedy? Inquired the nervous Mr. Nuttall. The girl pointed to the French windows leading to the lawn. You may wonder why we keep that window open in the fall of the year. Oh, it is quite warm for this time of the year, said Mr. Nuttall, shifting in his chair. But has that window got anything to do with the tragedy? The girl then told him this story. Out through that window 3 years ago this very day, her husband and her two younger brothers went off for a day's hunting in the woods you can see there. They never came back. In crossing the swamps to their favorite piece of hunting ground, all of them were engulfed in a treacherous piece of quicksand. Their bodies were never recovered. That was the dreadful part of it. My poor aunt thinks they will all come back someday. They and the little brown dog that was lost with them. And walk in that window just as they used to do. That is why the window is kept open every evening till night falls. Poor dear aunt. She has often told me how they went out. Her husband with his white raincoat over his arm. And Ronnie, her youngest brother, singing. As he always did to tease her because she said it got on her nerves. Do you know that sometimes on still, quiet evenings like this, I almost get the creepy feeling that they will all walk in through that window. Mr. Nuttall shuddered and was relieved when the aunt bustled into the room with a whirl of apologies for being late and making her appearance. I hope Vera has been amusing you, she said. She's been very interesting, said Mr. Nuttall, glancing in the direction of the open window. The long shadows of the late afternoon made the distant trees even gloomier, he thought. I do hope you don't mind the open window, said the aunt in a brisk voice. My husband and brothers will be home shortly from hunting, and they always come in this way. They've been out in the marshland today, so they'll make a fine mess on my poor carpets. So like you men folks, isn't it? She prattled on cheerfully about the hunting and the scarcity of birds and the prospects for duck in the winter. To Mr. Nuttall, it was all purely horrible. He made a desperate but not too successful attempt to turn the talk to a less ghastly topic. But he was conscious that his hostess was not giving him a great deal of her attention. Her eyes were constantly straying past him to the open window. He thought it was an unfortunate coincidence that he should have paid his visit on this tragic anniversary. He cleared his throat nervously and tried once more to capture the attention of his hostess. The doctors agree in ordering me complete rest, an absence of mental excitement, and the avoidance of anything in the way of physical exercise. On the matter of diet, they are not so much in agreement. No, said the aunt. Then she suddenly brightened into alert attention. Here they are at last, and just in time for tea. Don't they look as if they're muddy up to the eyes? Mr. Nuttall shivered slightly and turned toward the little girl to give her a smile of sympathy. The child was staring out through the open window with dazed horror in her eyes. In the chill shock of nameless fear, Mr. Nuttall swung around and looked in the same direction. In the deepening twilight, three figures were walking across the lawn toward the window. They They all carried guns under their arms, and one of them carried a muddy white raincoat. A tired brown spaniel was close at their heels. Noiselessly, they neared the house. And then Mr. Nuttall heard...
Do you catch a feel in the coat of gray? Do you catch a feel at the break of day with the fox and the hounds in the barn?
Good heavens! Just as the little girl had said... One of the men was singing. Mr. Nuttall grabbed wildly for his hat and coat and dove for the front door. Flinging it open, he ran down the path, tried to jump the hedges, tripped and fell down. He picked himself up and with one terrified look back at the house, ran down the road toward the railroad station. Back in the house, the figure carrying the muddy white raincoat stepped in the open window and said, "Well, we're home, dear. A bit muddy, but on time for supper. Who was that ran out as we came up to the house?" That was a Mr. Nuttall, dear, said the aunt. Some distant relative who dropped in for a visit. Extraordinary man. All he seemed to talk about was his illness. And when he saw you coming, dashed off without saying a word. I don't know what to make of it. The little girl shook her head gravely and said, I expect it was the spaniel. Mr. Nuttall has a horror of dogs. He was telling me just before you came down that... Once he was chased into a cemetery by a pack of wild dogs and had to spend the night in a newly dug grave with the creatures snarling and grinning and foaming just above him. Oh, why, the poor man, said her aunt. One would have thought he had seen a ghost. The little girl smiled sweetly. Probably never heard of Sam Preston. I didn't till one rainy night in spring a couple of years back. I was barreling along Highway 6 into the foothills of the Rockies in a 30-ton diesel carrying about 20 tons of high-octane gasoline. It was pretty windy, too, as I recall. But even though the visibility was not so good, I had to make time on account of that flat I had outside Omaha. Almost midnight, and I wanted to get to a diner and get some coffee because I needed it pretty bad. I was having trouble staying awake. I've been doing these long hauls for about 15 years now, but I never made this route. Anyway, I'm doing about 50 and staring at the white line in the highway, and rain is splashing off the windshield, and the wipers are going lickety-split. And then I saw him. Now, I'm not one to pick up hitchhikers. You never know. Might be a hijacker. Besides, we got orders not to. I got a glimpse of him as I went by, and what the devil, here's an old storm and no raincoat, and it's a good 10 miles to anywhere. So I hit the brakes hard, and I could feel all that gasoline sloshing around in the big tank piling up the weight behind me. But I pumped the brakes till I stopped and then waited for him to catch up. Boy, was he soaked. He swung up into the cab and dropped into the seat. Thanks, fella, he said. Here, I said, and I handed him a towel that I always keep handy for washing and shaving. Before I even asked him, he tells me he was out walking and got caught in a storm. Wasn't going far, he said, but every little bit helps. Seemed like a gentle old guy, gray hair and all. Used to be a driver himself, so he knew all about trucks and long hauls. Said he stopped driving about 10 years ago, and now he had a part-time job. Didn't tell me what it was. His name was Sam Preston. Anyway, he knew the roads, and we talked some every so often. I'd glance over at him. The lights from all the dials on the dashboard gave him a funny look, like he was sitting there in a kind of a misty glow. And his voice was like a whisper that somehow cut through the noise of the motor. Those diesels make quite a racket, you know. Oh, he asked about my kids, which was pretty strange since I didn't recall saying anything about them. Well, after a while, he told me that the place he got off was just a little ways ahead, and so I started to slow down. Just before he got out, he told me about a diner that was about 2 miles up ahead, but said to be careful because of a hairpin turn just before you come to it. The curve was not so bad, but this time of year there might be rock slides, especially with all the rain. He jumped out and thanked me, and I leaned over to the other side of the cab to thank him for the tip, but I couldn't see him. And just like that, he was gone. I didn't see any houses,
So about 10 minutes later, I ran into that hairpin turn, and it was a good thing I was taking it easy, because there in the road ahead was a great big rock slide, just like Sam said there might be. I left the lights on, and I jumped out. The truck couldn't get by, and I'd have to call the main office. I crawled over the big boulders, and I saw the lights of the diner. Just then, a state trooper car drove up and told me they'd have a bulldozer there in a couple of hours, and I could get through then. So I went over to the diner. I made the call, and the dispatcher was pretty nasty. I was pretty nasty back, too, because all I could think of was 20 tons of gasoline exploding and me in the middle of it. Nothing to do now but wait. I sat down for some coffee and told the guy behind the counter all about it. I told him that if it hadn't been for Sam Preston hitchhiking, I might look something like those hamburgers he was frying up. The counterman dropped a fork, and he looked at me. Who, he said? Sam Preston, I said. Lives around here someplace. Maybe you know him. Used to be a truck driver. Yeah, that's right, said the counterman. Sam Preston was a truck driver. About 10 years ago, he was caught in a rock slide out there about where your truck is standing. He was killed. He knew that it belonged to his Aunt Mary, but she would never talk about it. She said the stories about the house were silly nonsense and that there were no such things as ghosts. If all the villagers weren't a lot of superstitious idiots, she would be able to rent the house, and then she would have enough money to buy Jimmy some decent clothes and, best of all, take him to the movies as often as he would like to go. Jimmy thought about the house a lot. If he could only prove there wasn't any ghost. And so one Saturday morning when his aunt was in the village, Jimmy took the key to the haunted house and started out. Nothing to be scared of, he told himself. Ghosts aren't around in the daytime. But when he pushed through the dark, gloomy path and looked at those blank, dusty windows, he wasn't so sure. He walked up to the porch and stopped. His feet didn't seem to want to go up the step. It took him nearly 5 minutes to persuade them to move, but they finally did. They marched him right up to the door, and Jimmy put the key in the keyhole. It turned with a squeak. Jimmy pushed the door open and went in. The hall was empty. And then, as he stood there, listening to the bumping of his heart, gradually the light faded. The hall grew darker and darker, as if something huge had come up the porch behind him and stood there blocking the doorway. Then the door, all by itself, began to swing shut. And before he could stop it, it closed. And it was while he was pulling frantically at the handle to get out that Jimmy saw the ghost. It was a tall, dim, white figure, and it came gliding slowly down the stairs towards him. Jimmy gave a yell and yanked open the door and tore down the steps. He didn't stop until he was well down the road. Then he had to catch his breath. He sat down on a log. Boy, he thought, I've seen a ghost. Golly, that was awful. Then after a minute, he thought, what was so awful about it? He was trying to scare me like some smart aleck who's always jumping out from behind things. Pretty silly thing for a grown-up ghost to be doing. You know, it always makes you mad when someone deliberately tries to scare you. And as Jimmy got over his fright, he began to get angry. And pretty soon he got up and started back. He thought at least he would get the key which he'd left in the door. This time he approached very quietly. And as he reached out cautiously for the key, he heard a faint sound. He peeked in, and there was the ghost. He was going back upstairs, but he wasn't gliding now. He was doing sort of a dance. And every other step, he would double over and shake with laughter. He was enjoying the joke he had played on the boy. Well, this made Jimmy madder than ever. He stuck his head into the hallway and yelled at the top of his lungs. Boo! The ghost gave a shriek, leaped 2 feet in the air, and then collapsed on the stairs. Well, as soon as Jimmy saw he could scare the ghost even worse than the ghost could scare him, he wasn't afraid anymore. And he came right into the hall. The ghost was hanging on the banister and panting. He looked at Jimmy and moaned.
Oh, for goodness sake, boy. Heavens to bedsheets, what an awful thing to do.
Jimmy smiled at him. Now we're even. The ghost looked pained and said,
Look here, sonny, you don't understand. Ghosts are supposed to scare people. People aren't supposed to scare ghosts. It could be pretty serious for me if people got to know about it.
Jimmy said, You mean you don't want me to tell anybody about it?
Suppose we make a deal,
the ghost said.
You keep still about this, and in return how would you like to know how to vanish?
Oh, but that'd be swell, Jimmy exclaimed. But can you vanish?
Sure,
said the ghost. And he did. But his voice went right on explaining how handy it would be to get into the movies free, and if anybody wanted Jimmy to do some chores, they wouldn't be able to find him. But Jimmy had been thinking about things, and he said no, that there was only one thing that would keep him from telling people how easy it was to scare ghosts, and that was for the ghost to move into the old Miller house up the road.
That old shack, said the ghost. Have a heart, boy. The doors are half off. Roof leaky, rain dripping all over the place.
So they argued about it. The ghost said if Jimmy wanted to make money, he could learn to vanish, then he could join a circus and get a big salary. Jimmy said he didn't want to be in a circus. He wanted to go to college and learn to be a doctor. So the ghost sobbed and cried and said he'd been living in the house for 30 years and now he was being thrown out into the cold world. And he was trying to make Jimmy feel cruel. But Jimmy didn't feel cruel at all and pointed out that the ghost had certainly driven plenty of other people out into the cold world. And at last they came to an agreement. The ghost agreed to try out the old Miller house and teach Jimmy to vanish, in return for which Jimmy promised not to tell anyone that ghosts could be scared. So Jimmy's aunt cleaned up the house and rented it to some nice people and bought Jimmy some new clothes and took him to the movies. But every Saturday morning, Jimmy went up to the old Miller house for his vanishing lessons. It is really quite easy when you know how. And after only a few weeks, he could flicker. And in 6 weeks, the ghost gave him an examination, and he got B+, which is very good for a human. He taught Jimmy several more tricks. The best one was how to glare with fiery eyes, which was useful later on when Jimmy became a doctor and had to look down people's throats. So if ever you are in the hospital and hear a voice over the loudspeaker calling,
Dr. Jim Crackle, call for Dr. Crackle.
It might well be that it's Jimmy they're looking for, because every now and then he forgets himself and just vanishes.
It's a good thing to know. If ever you are staring into the darkness and you see something staring back, simply say, Boo, and it will go away. In the time we have left, I might mention several other interesting things. Don't ever brag about what you'd do if you saw a ghost. It's a sure way to get them angry at you. Don't slam doors, as you might pinch a ghost. Don't leave sharp objects like knives lying around. A ghost might sit on them. Just keep convincing yourself you aren't frightened, that you are brave, that there is nothing that can scare you. I really can't go on much longer. There's only about 3 inches of airspace between the water and the ceiling. If you will be good enough to stop this record now, before the water can arrive, I shall be more than grateful. Hurry, please hurry.
And you've been listening to the Wacky Spooktacular on Halloween.